Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, so today we're going to start our third section of that which we are starting. So for those of you who are new, welcome. You haven't missed anything, don't worry. Okay, well, we've done. Just the first 20 chapters, don't worry about it. What we're doing right now is we're taking a look at three separate stories and we're going to put them all together. When we finish going through each story individually, then we're going to take a look at all three of them together. And we are now about to start the third of the three stories on its individual merits. The three stories are the birth of Ishmael, which we studied in terms of Sarah and Abraham, their inability to have children. Sarah decides to give Abraham her maidservant Hagar, and Hagar becomes pregnant. She gets kicked out of the house. She wanders around the desert. She speaks to an angel. She gets a prophecy about her family, that her child is going to be a wild man, but that she should return to the home of Abraham, which she does. That's story number one, the prophecy that she receives about that child who will be born, Yishmael, and her conversation with the angel in the desert. Story number two, which we just completed last week, is the expulsion of Yishmael. This child is now born. 14 years later, we learn about the birth of Yitzchak. These two children now grow up in the same home, and Sarah sees that Yishmael is a negative influence on Yitzchak. He wants the inheritance for himself, and she is expelled together with his mother from the house of Avram. Now, for a second time, Hagar and Yishmael are wandering through the desert. This time they run out of water. She casts them aside underneath a tree. She goes away, not to hear the child die. Angel appears to her. She goes back. A well miraculously appears. She miraculously suddenly saw the well, which seems to have always been there. She gives him to drink, and they go on their merry way out of the house of Abraham. And now Abraham is left together with his wife and with Yitzchak. Those are the two stories, which were just said in a nutshell in 2 minutes, which we spent about 8-9 weeks on those two combined stories going through the text. What we're now going to do is start the third story, which is the binding of Isaac. And we pointed out already several times that this is the second similar scenario in which Abram is being told, send away one of your children. He was just told by Sarah and then by God himself, take Yishmael, your son, and cast him out. Expel him forever from your home. And Abram is faced with the task of kicking one of his own children out of his house. And the Torah says, Vayashkeim Abraham Babokar. He wakes up early in the morning and does that task. And we're going to find all the parallel phrases now where Abram is going to be asked to do a very similar thing, to take one of his children, not just one, but his child Yitzchak, which all of that was done for him on his behalf, and get rid of him, basically. Go offer him as a sacrifice, and we're going to go through that story, and then we're going to compare all three of these stories, the expulsion, the kicking out of Hagar, then the birth of Yishmael, the kicking out of Yishmael, and then the binding of Isaac. That's the summary of what it is that we're going to be taking a look at. And now we begin, each one has been its own little separate unit, and now we'll begin the third story. Okay, what we need to do is just take a quick look, just in terms of where this is and the topography of the landscape, so to speak. The last story that we completed ended on page 90, at the end of chapter 19. No, I'm sorry. I'm on the wrong page. Yes, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I flipped open to the wrong page. Thank you. We completed... Yeah, I had the wrong Avi Melech story. We completed on page 97, 98, that's right, towards the top of the page, verses 18, 19, and 20, 21 was the end of our story in which Hagar and Yishmael have been wandering through the desert. Then the angel appears to Hagar, tells her about the water, and then she finds a wife for... He becomes an archer, and she finds for him a wife. And where does she get the wife from? Right, from Mitzrayim. That was the last point that we spoke about, in which she goes back to her homeland. Right, you throw up a stick, where is it always going to land? On its roots, Rashi says. You always go back to your roots. She goes back to the place that she's most comfortable with. She goes back to her land, the land of Egypt. That's where she finds a wife from. And we found that parallel also, which we're going to see now at the end of the binding of Isaac. Also, we have the story of his finding a wife as well. This story was the mother, Hagar, finding the wife for her son. Our story is going to be the father, Abraham, finding the wife for his son. But right after the near-death experience of the child who's expelled from the house of Abraham, the very next step is finding a wife and then the continuation of that child's history. Verses 22 through 34, we are not going to study in depth now, but just to see where, just the layout of the land, so to speak, is the alliance with Avimelech at Be'er Sheva. At that time, Avimelech approaches Avram and makes a peace treaty with him, makes a pact, and we have a couple of verses describing that. And that's going to lead us into our story, which follows immediately after. Just what what's important to see that as we get to our story, which is chapter 22. What we're going to do is, as we are accustomed to in this particular style in the class that I like to do it here, we're going to go through the text only today. I hope we'll be able to get through the whole story. We probably will not, but we'll get through as much as we can of the text. Just to raise questions. Today is going to be a day of questions. If you only come today and you don't ever come back, you're going to be left with a lot of questions. But that's how we're going to do it. We're going to raise...
For 3 months.
Right. We're going to raise all the questions that we can on the text. This is why there is no peeking underneath. I have sheets here. If I catch you looking underneath, I'm going to hand you a piece of paper to put on top of the notes. We're going to just look at the text. Just at the text. And looking at it from that perspective, what questions would we have? What questions would we want answered? What do we need to further look into? And then in subsequent classes, we'll take a look at Rashi, Ramban, and Rav Hirsch, as we've done. When we complete this series, now we'll have the three stories together, and then we'll take a look at all of them as a whole unit. Okay, ready? Let's do it. Beginning on page 100 and 101, Vayehi achar hadvarim ha'elan, it happened after these things, v'ho Elokim nisa es Avraham, that God tested Avraham. Vayomer elav, and said to him, Abraham, Vayomer hineini, and he replied, here I am. Questions, comments?
Esther, what thing?
Excellent. First question, of course, is if the Torah introduces us to a story, this is going to be a major, major, major story in the Torah. Rabbi Foreman, who was here a couple of weeks ago, when he talks about this particular episode, so he likes to introduce it with, you know, this is really not your classic bedtime story that you read to your children at night. You know, God appears out of the blue to God, to Abraham, and says, you know that son you really like? I want you to kill him. It's sort of like, it's a little dramatic, like it's not like we're so used to the story, but it's really not a children's story, but children learn it, and then we sort of are stuck with the interpretation and the understanding that we have as 5 years, because my 5-year-old knows the story. Well, how do you explain this to a 5-year-old? Well, whatever words you use, whatever concepts you use, becomes, oh, that's what the story is about. And now for the rest of your life, I sort of get the story, but you only got it because I needed to explain it to you when you were 5, because how else do I explain God, out of the blue, coming to Abraham and saying, kill your son? It's a tough story. This is going to be a very, very difficult story to understand what it is that God wants from Abraham. And that really is question number 2, where you jumped with the first phrase, which was correct, but the big question on this pasuk is the phrase, V'Hashem Nisa es Abraham, God tested Avram. What does God want from Avram? What does he want from him?
Loyalty.
So loyalty. So is it loyalty? Is that a fair thing to say? You will prove your loyalty to me by killing your son, who I promised will be a great nation. We're used to those. I only mean to put like, of course, mm-hmm. Loyalty. Right? Does that make sense to us that's a sign of loyalty? You ask me to kill my child? That alone doesn't make any sense. I mean, kill my child? And then you ask me, human sacrifice? We don't believe in that stuff. And you already promised me that he's going to be a great nation. What does God want from Avram? That it's specifically referred to as a test. This is one of the only places in the Torah where we have in the beginning of an episode the phrase, and God tested whoever. Where it's not just like looking like all of our lives are tests in terms of the episodes that we deal with, but here we have an episode in which it's defined in advance, God tests Abraham here. Which means that we have to answer the question, well, what was this test about? That's going to be a major question. And we're familiar with the story, but that's going to be a major... You know, again, quoting Rabbi Foreman, but he likes to phrase it, if you're sitting next to the airplane, next to some Christian fellow, and he says, "Oh my goodness, you're an Orthodox Jew. I've always wanted to meet an Orthodox Jew. I have so many questions on the Bible." And you say, "Oh no." And he says, "Yeah, but you're familiar with the stories, right?" You say, "Of course I am." He says, "What did God want from Abraham? Can you answer that question?" So if the answer is no, I can't answer the question. It's like, gosh, I really don't know what he wanted. I mean, what did he want? He wanted him to do it? Like, what did he want to show out of Abraham? If you can't answer that question, you don't understand the story. So the reality is most of us, that's right, we really don't understand the story, what it is that God wants out of Abraham, what is this test about? But that's one of those big questions. Anyway, so we have the opening phrase goes after these things. So the Torah sets up this massive story by saying, this story takes place after these things. Well, what things? What took place prior to this that leads into the story that the Torah doesn't just say, oh, I have another episode to tell you about Abraham's life. When the Torah starts a story with the phrase that it was after these things, it's clearly linking something which happened prior is leading up to and introducing us to this particular episode. So we say, well, what is that? Well, the most recent thing is the peace treaty that he made with Avimelech, who came. Unlikely that that's what it is, because what does that have to do with this particular story? But before that,
Ishmael.
We have a very important story, which we already know is fairly similar in nature, in which Abraham was asked to expel his other son, his son Yishmael, his eldest son. His son was at the time 17, 18 years old. He was told to kick him out of the house, and it was after these things. Something happened there, or somewhere, with something, that leads into this story. Okay, so we have in this first verse, what were these things? What is this test? And then we have the opening of the test. God calls to Avram, and Avram responds, Vayomer, Hineini, here I am. We'll have to see how often and how many times that phrase comes up. This phrase of Hineini, here I am.
Yeah, means more than just
right?
Here I am.
So, right? So, no, and this is out of the blue. God's just calling to Avram out of the blue, saying, Avram! And Avram responds, Hineini. Now, if we knew that this was a test, if Avram knew that it was a test, and I called out to him and he says, I'm ready. That's one thing. But Avram doesn't know what we know. We know that the Torah says some event just took place that leads God to want to test Avram, and therefore he calls Avram's name. But Avram doesn't know that. He just knows that all of a sudden, in the middle of the day, one day, God calls out to him, Avram, and he responds, Hineini, here I am, I'm ready for what you want. Okay, again, we're just here to raise some questions and see if we could see the whole text as a whole. Let's get the whole story in one chunk, and then we'll take a look at it, obviously, more in depth in subsequent weeks. Vayomer, so what does God say to Avram? Kach no es bincho, es yichidcho, asher ahavta. Take, please, your son, your only one, whom you love, Yitzchak, the lech lecha el eretz ha-Moria, and go for you to the land of Moria, v'ha'aleu sham li'oila, and you will bring him up there as an offering, al achad he'horim asher omar elach, upon one of the mountains which I shall tell to you. Okay, here is the big command. This is it, by the way. The next pasuk is already Avram's action. The only verse describing what God wants from Avram is this. We just read it, the whole thing. You know, when we talk about the binding of the Isaac, right? This is a major episode in Jewish history. The command took up one verse. That was it. We just read from start to finish. Everything that God is going to want from Avram is included in this verse. So let's read the verse. What are some comments, questions that we have here? Yeah.
In those days, was an offering always a substantial concrete offering, or was an offering, could an offering be an offering of the heart that says, God asking Isaac, I'm wanting you in your mind to trade the thing that you love most in the world for your love for me. Acknowledge to me that you...
I think it's more concrete. There might be. Yeah, I don't know. In terms of this sense,
okay.
It doesn't seem that way.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, comments, questions, yeah?
I'm wondering why God didn't say, take Isaac.
Okay, instead, what did he say?
Take your son, the one you love, and your only one.
Okay, so certainly we're going to have to deal with this, and this is going to be picked up by all the commentators. This is a long command, in the sense where all what he wants him is to take Isaac, and he has, three other phrases? Take your son, your only one, whom you love, and then he says, Isaac. What would be some thoughts as to why he would do that?
Because
too shocking to just come right out.
Okay, so he's breaking him in that there's going to be some type of concept. That's certainly a possibility. We'll see some of the commentators will say this. So we have in the introduction to what it is that he wants them to do, this long, drawn-out phrase. Okay, what else do we have?
Well, he wasn't ready to do what God wanted before.
He was not ready, meaning what?
With Ishmael, he did not want
to. Now remember the story. No. Sarah says, kick him out. Abraham doesn't want to. Then what happens?
Then God tells him to hear Sarah.
And then what happens?
He
wakes up early in the morning. In other words, his lack of alacrity, his not wanting to do so, was because it was his wife telling him to kick out his son. He said, this is my son, I don't want to do that. God intervenes and says, listen to her, she knows what she's saying. Abraham says, okay. Wakes up early in the morning and sends him on his way. So we don't see Abraham not fulfilling Hashem's word, we just see him not wanting to do what Sarah says, until God comes in and says, she's right, she knows what to do, listen.
Well, he said, that's my son.
Right, but as soon as God says to do it, he goes ahead, he does. He wakes up early in the morning and he does it.
He does.
Well, there's a Hebrew phrase here, which you got to look on the Hebrew side to appreciate, that should ring a bell. Lech lecha, excellent. Where does the phrase lech lecha appear?
When God told Abraham to move out of his homeland.
This is the very first command that Hashem gives to Avram that we have recorded. Right after Parshas Noach, the very next parsha is Parshas Lech Lecha, and it opens with God speaking to Avram and saying, Lech Lecha me'artzecha, leave your land. That same exact phrase, Lech Lecha, go for you. So we have a repetition. Now, where have we seen that phrase before? This phrase appears in the very first command that Hashem gives to Avram when Avram leaves everything behind and follows after God. And we have that same phraseology here as well. And where is Avram told to go to?
The land of Moriah.
The land of Moriah, which is specifically, we're going to see, will be on the temple, the mount, which eventually will be the place in which the Beis HaMikdash is built, which he's heading to the same place. There he was headed from outside the land to the land. Here he's heading from within the land, but to Yerushalayim, the place, the mountain, which will eventually house Yerushalayim and the temple itself. Okay, and what should he do there? Right, so what's the phrase? Ha'aleu sham li'ola. Bring him up there as an ola, as an offering. An ola specifically is a type of offering which is completely burnt. As opposed to when the temple stood, there were various types of offerings, some which were eaten by the priest or by the ones who brought it, and some which were completely burnt. The ola is a type of offering which is a type that was brought before the temple was built. So bring him up, raise him up, v'ha'aleu sham, raise him literally up as an offering on one of the mountains, and I will show you. So he doesn't even tell him exactly where he's going, but that's the command. So that's all that we have. This is the entire command. God appears out of the blue to Avram. Take your son that you love, your only son, Yitzchak, take him to the land of Moriah, to one of the mountains which I will show you. So the land, you know, the general direction, you know that you know where you're going. Which mountain? I'll show you when you get there. What should you do there? The Ha'aleu Sham Le'ola. There upon that mountain you will bring him as an offering. End of the dialogue. We do not hear anything from Avram. Torah does not tell us that Avram had a response, didn't say yes, didn't say no, didn't question. We have nothing other than this is the command that Hashem gets. The next thing we see in verse 3, Vayashkem Avraham Bavokir. Avraham arises early in the morning. And where have we seen this phrase before?
Ishmael.
Same thing that he did by Ishmael. As soon as the command comes from God, kick him out, Avram wakes up early in the morning. Same story here. God says to Avram, worse than kick him out, right? Raise him up as an offering. Next phrase, Avraham awakes early in the morning.
I find this troubling. I mean, here Avraham argued with God over Sodom and Gomorrah.
Excellent.
And
are you reading the notes?
No. Okay. I told you I studied this before. But I mean, the question. I mean, why is he so compliant? Why is he so careful?
Okay, excellent. That's one of the questions to add to this. In other words, on the first phrase that the Torah describes this as being a test. So when Hashem tells Avram, "I'm going to destroy the cities of Sodom and Amorah," which the Torah doesn't tell us was a test. He just says, "I'm going to tell him because he's my partner in life. So I'm going to tell him what I'm going to do." And Avraham moves the mountains. He'll do everything possible to save them. These are a bunch of wicked people. And he's whatever it takes. And here we get the command for Avram himself to take his son himself and bring him as an offering, and not a word, not a whisper, not an attempt to try to understand, not an attempt to talk him out of it, just, that's what you want, that's what I'm going to do. Well, when you wanted to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, Avram doesn't say, well, God, if that's what you want, if that's your will, I'm with you. You know what? Not only am I with you, I'll take up arms and I'll help you wipe them out. He doesn't say that. If that's your will, let me join in your will. He argues against his will. Your will is to destroy. Maybe I can argue to save. And here, God says, my will is for you to take him up as an offering. And Avram says, that's your will. That's what I'm going to do. Excellent. And we'll add that to the question of what exactly is this test and why does Avram respond so differently than he does to the cities of Sodom and Amorah. Excellent. Okay, continuing in verse 3, Vayashkem Avram Vokes, he wakes up early in the morning, Vayachavosh es chamaro, and he saddles his donkey. Have you seen that anywhere before? We haven't actually seen it here, but it appears elsewhere in the Torah. Somebody else woke up early and saddled his donkey.
Bilam,
excellent. Bilam, on his way to curse the Jewish people, also has this exact same phrase, which the sages will connect as well, that Bilam also wakes up early in the morning following a prophetic vision from God. God here giving him this quasi-permission to go and curse the Jewish people. And the Torah's exact same phrase, the following verse, Bilam awakes, arises early in the morning, and saddles his own donkey. What's the significance of saddling his own donkey?
It's a humbling thing.
It's humbling? It's humbling in what sense?
Well, he could wake up the other guy early and make him do it. He's
right, so it's humbling in the sense that there are servants who would generally do that. Saddling a donkey was generally considered within the role of the servants who were there in the house. So the fact that Avram is doing it himself is a sign of either, like it isn't by Bilam, I'm so excited to do this, I can't wait for that, I got to do it myself. There's some aspect of the Torah telling us something. And is this important or not important for us to know who saddled the donkey that Avram rode on?
Obviously, it's important, or it would
right.
be.
I'm saying, they're going to be like, I really don't care who filled the water jug that he took with him. Who packed his bag? I don't know. Who cares?
Well, if you do it yourself, it does show.
So it becomes significant, right? So it becomes significant that he's doing it himself, and that the fact that he is doing it himself is somehow significant and unusual that he's saddling his own donkey. And we see that here. Okay, so Avram wakes up early in the morning, saddles his donkey. Vayikacha shenena arovito, and he takes his two young lads with him.
And who's that? Oh.
Excellent.
Yeah. Who are the young lads other than Isaac and?
Now, it's not Isaac. There are two young lads besides Isaac, because the verse says, Vayikacha shenena arovito v'es Yitzchak bino, and his son Yitzchak.
Well, can't so, Ishmael he just sent away?
Okay, so who are these two going to be? In other words, Ishmael is out of the picture. He's been sent away. The Torah does not feel the need to tell us exactly who they are, but we have these two lads who are listed here who are not around at the time of the saddling of the donkey, because Avram does that himself, but he takes these other two lads. Why are they being brought at all?
How do you say young men in Hebrew? That are, so it's clear they're young. So what does young mean? Like unmarried?
Probably.
We're not talking like under 10, we're talking like teenager.
Yeah, yes, I don't know, and I'm open to like leaving that on the table as a question of what's their purpose? What are they here for? Yeah.
Could it be to show that God is saying, I could have told you to just take anyone as a sacrifice?
Oh, that's a good point.
But no, I want you to take this specific Isaac, because you have so much love for him,
so I
show
think
a level of loyalty.
What you're saying is, right, going back to the previous verses, right, in other words, it's not just a matter of, the test is not, no, let's stop on that point for a second. In other words, we asked for loyalty, right? What does God want from loyalty? If it's loyalty, would God have been able to test Avram's loyalty if God said, I want you, Avraham, to go into the nearest home, pick up a child, and offer him as a sacrifice?
No.
So would that have been a test of Avram's loyalty?
Because there's no real connection between...
It would have been a test of loyalty.
I think so also, 100%. God just asked him to take a child and to sacrifice him, and Avram's going to say, do what? So that's right, I just asked you to take a child and sacrifice him. If Avram would have said, okay, boss, that would have been a test of loyalty.
Hold on a minute.
Yeah.
we're looking at this from our view, where we wouldn't sacrifice a child for anything. But at the time Abraham lived, child sacrifice was very, very prevalent among other people.
Did Abraham sacrifice any children?
No, he didn't have any to sacrifice until Ishmael and Isaac. I don't know what age they were when they sacrificed him, but I know that it's not an unusual thing to sacrifice your child.
Okay.
So a view that I've heard from my husband is, he's excited to get up and go sacrifice his child. Now he's going to get to participate in what everybody else around him, and the test isn't, is he willing to sacrifice it? His test is he willing not to? His arm had to be restrained by the rams, and they provided a different sacrifice.
Yeah, so he has this promise. So he's 37 years old at this time, Yitzchak. He is promised that this child is going to be the multitude of the stars and the sands of the sea several times. And so just to say that he was excited to be able to do so, to be part of, you know, that culture. See, I mean, he could have done that on his own years before, but he's been preaching against such type of practices. That's anti what it was that he stood for and believed in. So, I don't know. We'll see if that... at this point, we can throw any theory out, and we'll see as we go through. But I'm just pointing out, just to focus on the point, if it's a test of loyalty, I don't know, we could debate. I think it would have been a test of loyalty to take some child just to do that, but it is specifically his child. And there is clearly a connection. It's a 37-year relationship at this point. It's not just a baby. And that's what he's told to do. So we have these two lads who go with him. These two lads, and we don't know what their purpose is just yet, other than if we could simply say, I don't know, they were there to accompany him. Is that significant enough that we need to be told that they accompanied him to hold his food provisions? I don't know. But we're told that there were these two lads that went with him. And his son, Yitzchak.
Why do we have to be told that Isaac is his son?
Excellent. So here we have an extra phrase. In other words, not only were the two lads taken and Yitzchak his sons. He'd say, wait a minute, I can remember back to the previous verse. It said in verse 2, not once, not twice, not three times, that Isaac is the beloved only son of Avram. And here we have in verse 3, again repeated that that's who he took. Now, given what we learned from Yishmael, we can come up with a very simple answer for that, which, again, we're not in the stage of answering, but just, how do we always describe Yishmael? Remember how many times we saw that?
The lad.
Right, always described in that he was either the lad, he was the child of Hagar, the child of the maidservant. He was described always in a different way depending on who the speaker was, from Sarah to Avram to God himself. And Yitzchak here is repeated, described as his son. Now, obviously, the more that we call Yitzchak his son, the more difficult it becomes to carry out the task. Because what should Avram be doing? Assuming, let's put ourselves in Avram's shoes for a moment. I got this command from God, I don't get it. Let's just remember, I'm willing to say, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me, but that's what he wants me to do. For whatever this test is, I'm going to do it. I'm now being told to take my son, offer him as a sacrifice, I'm going to do so. What should be, if I were a normal human being, going to sacrifice my son, what would I be doing over the course of the next 3 days?
Thinking about how you're losing your son.
And what will allow myself to psychologically be able to do that?
Stop thinking of him as your son.
Correct. The more that I distance myself from him as my son, the easier it will be to accomplish this task. I've been asked to do something very difficult. However we'll come to the conclusion of what this test is, this isn't not a simple test. He's being asked to sacrifice his one and only beloved son. Psychologically, what we would expect would be to distance yourself as much as possible from that relationship to allow this to happen. We've seen that, you know, you don't have to go back farther than, you know, Nazi Germany, Lahavdil, just to show an example. What made it possible for the culture to perpetrate what they did? They distanced themselves from the human aspect of these are other people like us. They became animals. They became rats. They became whatever the terminology they use, that was the propaganda. If I stop viewing you as an extension as me, as just my brother, as my friend, as my neighbor, I can do horrific things because you are not like me, you're something else. So in a different version of that, we would expect Avram to be distancing himself from this being my son, because it's hard to take a knife to my son if that's what I'm being asked to do. Yeah, it's the Torah here. Who does Avram take? He takes his son. It is stressed to us that we have the lads, and we have Yitzchak repeated his son. Vayivak, sorry?
I'm just wondering if those young men are intended to help provide a distraction then.
Okay, I don't know what they're...
You do take young children along, provide a nice distraction to older people.
Yeah.
You know, when you have little kids around,
right?
They're so cute and everything that they distract you from, like,
that's correct,
the other ones.
You just noticed, by the way, at a shiva house, there's a halacha that the mourner should not have a child in their lap. Because playing with children is a distraction. The whole concept of the shiva is to be focused on the mourning. And a child is by definition a distraction. They are distracting.
So should you not bring a child?
So I probably, unless it was, you know, a close family, but a child is a distraction to the mourner. The mourner is, but again, that's in the ideal world, in the same way as, you know, we also talk about other things, because people...
I just witnessed that myself last week.
Where the child was a major distraction to what was going on.
Yeah.
Right.
One of the mourners had a child on her
lap. It's a complete distraction. You can't have a serious conversation. Now, sometimes mourners need a break, and they want that distraction. But it is you can't do what you need to do that. In any case, we'll leave that on the table. He has these two lads. He takes Yitzchak vayivaka atzei olah. He splits the wood for the offering. Vayelach elamakom asher amar loho elokim. And he gets up, and he goes to the place which God had spoken to him.
When did he sit down? You don't split wood while you're sitting.
Okay, so we have a verb of, and he stood up. So if you have a verb of stood up, it would imply someone sitting before. And we certainly don't have that, because he wakes up, let's go through the verbs of this verse. We have one verse here with a lot of verbs. He wakes up early in the morning. Then he saddles his donkey. Vayikach, then he takes two lads with him and his son Yitzchak. Vayivaka, fourth verb, he chops the wood. Vayokam, fifth, he gets up. Vayelach, and he goes to the place that God had told him. So we have six actions in this one verse following the command of getting up early in the morning, saddling, taking the lads, chopping wood, standing up and going. And you have pointed out correctly, the only verb that seems to be dangling, like where, what's that verb doing there, is the verb vayokam, and he stood up. Well, what does that add to the story? The other five, they at least follow a pattern. Now, the chopping of the wood, is in it, where would we have put the verb of chopping the wood?
After the donkey. Oh, what?
I was like, how would we have
ordered?
Thanks, right? I was on it for another. To put this in order, here are six verbs that take place in this particular verse. Six verbs being waking up, saddling, taking the lad, chopping wood, standing up and going. You know, put them in your own order. I do not think we would have come to this particular order, right? The chopping of the wood seems to be misplaced. Aside for your question, Rachel's question of what do you mean he stood up? Like, if you want to tell me he woke up and he stood up, that makes sense. But like, he's been up for a long time already at this point, doing all sorts of things which require him to stand, and then it says, and he stood up and he left. So that's certainly an interesting verb we'll have to address. But the chopping of the wood, I would have put right after he wakes up. Wake up in the morning, you chop your wood, and then, you know, you saddle your donkey and you take off with the lads and with your son. But
Didn't he have the lads chop the wood?
Excellent. So the lads do not saddle the donkey. Avram does that himself. Seems like he's chopping the wood as well. So what are these lads doing there? They're dead weight. At least they're not chopping the wood. They're not saddling the donkey. What is it that they are doing? Okay, but in any case, we'll leave that. But we have this chopping of the wood, which comes at an odd point in the story. It sounds like he chopped the wood after he took the lads and Isaac, and he's got the saddle donkey. He says, wait. And then everybody's like ready to go. Then he goes and he chops the wood. Then he gets up, and vayelach, and he goes. Now, it's interesting also, the verb vayelach, is that singular or plural?
Singular.
And he went. Now, at this point, he's got quite an entourage. He's got two lads. He's got Yitzchak and himself. So it should have said, I would have thought,
and
And they went. This party, Avraham with Yitzchak and the two lads, now went off to the place that God had commanded Avraham. But the Torah does not tell us in that way. The Torah presents this from Avraham's perspective. This is, so to speak, almost as if to say, this is Avraham's story. Avraham, all these verbs are singular. Avraham wakes up. He saddles his donkey. He takes the two lads and his son Yitzchak. He chops the wood. He stands up and he goes to the place, even though he's traveling with an entourage. So we get the picture at the end of this verse of this being Avraham's story. We have all six of these verbs, a little bit out of order. We'll have to address all of these questions.
Is this an outline for the whole story?
God willing.
Is this the short form, and now we're going into the details? Because the next thing it says is on the third day. What do you mean the third day? On the third day.
Yeah, sorry, you can't ask a question on the verse that I didn't read.
Okay, I know, those but are the rules. Saying, like, could this be the short version of...
I mean, the simple reading does not imply that. It just implies this is getting us... In other words, think about what happens from the beginning of the verse to the end of the verse. Simply, verse 2, again, it was just one verse, is the command.
Yeah.
Verse 3 takes us from waking up from the command. Avram received his prophecies, like all the prophets except for Moshe, asleep. So we get from the moment he wakes up after the command until he takes off. What did it take for Avram to get ready to go? This is what we are told. Now, the verse could have skipped the whole thing and said, and Avram went. Mm-hmm. We are told all the details, six steps that went into from the moment he wakes up until he goes. But I wouldn't have seen this as a microcosm outline. This is just getting us on the road.
Okay,
verse 4. Bayom HaShlishi, it's the third day. So the Torah tells us he went. 3 days apparently pass. Vayisa Avraham es Einav. And Avraham lifts up his eyes. And he sees Vayar es Hamakom Merachok. And he sees the place from off to a distance. Where have we seen this phrase before? Well, we haven't seen this exact phrase, so we'll leave it from that. But where have we seen this idea?
Hagar.
Now, it wasn't the exact phrase, but what happened to her? Her eyes were opened, and suddenly she was able to see that the well was there. Now, it wasn't this exact phrase, but we will see this other phrase is going to appear elsewhere in the Torah. Avraham lifts up his eyes, and he sees the place from afar. Questions, comments?
Well, he didn't even know exactly where he was going.
Excellent.
To.
Excellent. If we're a text-based reader right now, that's what we're doing, because we're not looking at the notes underneath, right? So we're not using the sages, we're not using the commentary, we're just reading text. Like, what do you mean he saw the place from afar? God told him, what did God tell him in verse 2?
I'll show
go to the land of Moriah, and I will show you the mountain upon which I want you to bring him as an offering. Avram does the six verbs in verse 2. He's 3 days into it. And he lifts up his eyes, and he sees the place from afar. Which place? Mm-hmm. So the only place that we get is the land of Moriah, but that's a pretty... It's a land. It's a certain area. He doesn't know which mountain to go on in that land. All he was told was the place, and he sees it from off in a distance. Okay, we'll have to see again. We'll look into the significance of this lifting up of the eyes and the seeing. Vayomer Avram el Na'arav. Avram now says to his two lads, who have played what role so far?
None.
Right? No role that we know so far. He now says to his two lads, Shvu lachem po im hachamor. You stay here with the donkey. Va'ani v'hanar nelcho ad ko. And I and the lad will go ad ko until yonder, some other place. And we will prostrate, we will bow down literally. You'll notice it's translated as worship, but nishtachaveh literally means to bow down. V'nashuva aleichem, we will return to you. Questions, comments on this verse?
How can you say he's going to return what he plans to
do? Excellent, okay. Now, Avram's been given a command. His command is, bring up your son, Isaac, your only son, the one that you love, as an offering to me. Avram now turns to the lads, for some reason, unbeknownst to us, and says, you stay here with the donkey. I and who?
The lad.
What happened from verse 3? Verse 3 was, Yitzchak, my son, has now become... In verse 3. It wasn't Avram speaking, but the Torah is telling us what Avram did, and is describing it as his son. That's correct. Avram does not call, it's not Avram not speaking his son, but the Torah is calling it his son. From the Torah's perspective, telling us who this child is to Avram, his beloved son. And now when Avram speaks, he calls Yitzchak the lad. Similar to the way that Yishmael was referred to in our previous story as the lad. Now this would be something we would expect, Avram's being asked to kill him. But that's not what Avram says here. What does he say to these other two lads?
He's going to return.
I'm going to return. What are we going to do?
We're
taking this trek. So he woke up early one morning, out of the blue, right? Avram wakes up his two lads. They're sleeping. They're thinking it's a regular day. And all of a sudden, Avram says, it doesn't seem like he told them about the prophecy. He wakes them up one morning and says, we're going on a trip. Where are we going? We're going to the land of Moriah. Why? Apparently, he told them nothing. But the two lads, Yitzchak, everyone's groggy. They're waking up early in the morning. Avram's running around. He's got all these things to do. He's getting up. He's saddling. He's chopping wood. He's taking everybody ready. He's standing up. And they go. 3 days later, he says to them, enough. You guys wait here. I and the lad are going, and we are going to bow down, and then we're going to return. Okay, boss. So they stay now with the donkey. Avram and Yitzchak, this is the first thing that Yitzchak's been told. Yitzchak has, as far as we know, has been told nothing more than the lads have been told. None of them know what they're doing.
Where's the wood?
Okay.
Now he has...
Hold on.
Well, up till this point, we don't... I mean...
Right, until this point, apparently they're schlepping it along with them because we're assuming he didn't leave the wood.
The donkey?
Or with the, we don't know where anything is. Right now, let's go. We'll take it verse at a time and see what we have. Right now, so the two lads and the donkey are being left behind. Avram is telling him, we're going to bow down. Now, what I'm assuming you meant to ask is, what were one of the verbs, the actions that Avram does before taking off? He's chopping wood. Now, he chops the wood at what point in the story again?
Before he stands up to leave.
All right, after the donkey's been saddled, after the lads have been taken, after Yitzchak has been taken, and then the Torah says, he chops the wood. Now, apparently they took it with them, and now he tells everybody to stop, because what are we going to do? We're going to go bow down in return. What do you need the wood for? Yeah.
Could he have said, we will return, instead of I will return, because he didn't want the lads to get the idea that I'm going to leave Isaac.
Oh, you're giving answers. You're giving answers, which might be.
No. Okay, sorry.
It's a possibility. I'm saying, right now, the way that I like to do this is we're going to read the whole text. I see it's already, we're not going to get anywhere near the end of the story. But that's fine. We're just raising all the, I want to see the whole picture of the story, raise the questions, then we're going to go through and see how they commentate it. No, that's fine. So, but what we have are, these are the questions. In other words, he tells them, now this is the first thing that Yitzchak, what's he thinking? He also was woken up early one morning, out of the blue, told to pack up his things, we're going on a trip, with wood. All of a sudden, Avram stops, tells his two lads and the donkey to stay behind, that he and Yitzchak, who is now being called
the lad,
who's 37, not being called my son, called the lad, we're going to bow down. He's got to be thinking what we're thinking of, what's with the wood, Dad? But this is what we have. So far, so good?
Right.
And the obvious question which was addressed of, how did Avram even say these words? Why did he say the Nashuva? Don't say anything. Just say, we're going to bow down. No, but he adds the phrase, and we, plural, will return to you. Vayikach Avraham esatzei ha'olah. Verse 6. And Avraham now takes that wood for the offering that he had chopped. Vayosem al Yitzchak bino. And he places it on his son Yitzchak. Vayikach biyado es ha'esh ves ha'machalas. And he takes in his hand the fire and the knife. Vayelchu shnehem yachtav. And they go together, the two of them. Questions, comments on this verse?
Well, he's his son again.
Okay, so now who is Avram speaking, or is this the Torah speaking?
Torah.
Right, now this is the Torah narrating for us. And again, as we saw in verse 3, when the Torah narrates, it refers to Yitzchak specifically as his son. When Avram speaks, he referred to him as the lad. So here again we see that narration goes back to that personal relationship. The Torah narrates it as his son. What else do we have in this verse?
The fire and the knife have now appeared.
Excellent. Fire and the knife, which were not... The Torah goes out of its way to tell us that Avram is chopping wood before they leave. If the Torah wouldn't have told us that, and would have only told us here that all these things appeared, I would have said, yeah, well, before they left, they packed them up. No. The Torah tells us that he chopped the wood. It does not tell us that he took with him... And they appear at this point. Interesting comment. What else we got?
How does he have fire in his hand?
Okay, so the assumption would be that the fire is the flint or something that would be used to kindle a fire. I think that's how we would have to understand that. In other words, that he took whatever they had in those days to be able to create a fire. That's what I would go with.
I'm wondering why it doesn't say took fire or the fire and a knife.
Okay, we have the hay, hama'achelas, as if there's some
the knife.
Excellent point.
That
in other words, it seems like it was an identifiable knife, which, if we had to guess, it would be identifiable in what sense?
God provided it.
Well, on a simpler, on a simple level, what kind of knife was it?
A sacrificial knife.
If it's the knife, I would have to assume it was... They probably had a different knife that they used for sacrificing animals than they had for something that you needed a bigger knife. I'm not sure about that. I'm just going with your comment. There's an interesting comment that it was the knife. Excellent. We got more stuff in this. What else do we have here? You guys are focusing on some beautiful fine points and missing what in my mind was a bigger one. Excellent. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. Here we're still, how close are we to our destination?
We don't know.
Well, we had a word. What did the Torah say in verse 5?
He saw it.
In verse 4, excuse me. Verse 4.
From afar,
right? He perceives it from afar. So we're leaving the donkey and our stuff behind. This is our base camp. And now we're going up a mountain. We have to climb because the sacrifice is taking place in some mountain. We're still afar. So I'm leaving the lads and the donkey behind. And now we're going to begin our ascent up the mountain to bow down. And what does he do with the wood? He places it on Isaac. Now, this should recall something. What do we have in the story of Yishmael and Hagar?
He places the water.
Abraham places the water and the food on Hagar's shoulder as he sends them off. And then what does he do with his son Yishmael? So we had a very funny phraseology, if you remember. Either the child on Hagar's shoulder, right? So the commentator said, well, either just it means that her dash is there. But the simple reading of the text netted that he placed the food and the water on Hagar's shoulder, and then he placed the lad on Hagar's shoulder and sends her away. And here we have Avram taking his son Yitzchak, and it's the opposite. He's not placing the child on someone's shoulder, his own or other, he's placing the wood on top of Yitzchak's shoulder as he then continues forward. Very, very interesting imagery that we have here, which however many times you might see, we actually read this story twice a year. We read it as in the weekly parsha. We read it on Rosh Hashanah. I don't know if I ask people, like, how did the wood get... It gets lost in the story. We have here an image of they leave... Yitzchak is schlepping the wood. He's underneath the wood that was chopped back at home. Now, I would have just chopped wood there. What's easier, to bring an axe or to bring the chopped wood?
Well, you don't know that there's going to be wood there.
Okay, so maybe they didn't know. But we have the... Which is a fine point. But what we have is the wood being chopped early, schlepped for 3 days, and now schlepped on foot... Because we're leaving the donkey behind as we climb up the mountain, and how is it getting there? On the back of Yitzchak's shoulder. Now there's another verb, if you look on the Hebrew side, it probably is translated into English as well, that has appeared twice in this verse. In verse 6, what verb here do we have twice?
Yikach.
Yes, vayikach, and he took. And Avram took the wood, and he took into his hand the fire. Which is a phrase that we have this phrase as well, Vayikach. Where do we have that earlier? In verse 3, Pasuk Gimel, we also have this phrase of Avram waking early in the morning, and he took the two lads and his son Yitzchak. So it's just interesting. Again, we're just raising some questions and looking for some similarities and some patterns. Avram is doing a lot of
taking.
He took his lads and his son Yitzchak. He takes the fire and that which he'll need into his hand. He takes the wood that he'll need, placing it onto Yitzchak. Vayelchu shnehem yachtav. And this verse concludes, and the two of them walked together. Is that necessary or extraneous?
Where does it say that?
The end of verse 6.
Oh, Oh, okay. And the two of them went together.
And the two of them went together. Vayelchu shnehem yachdam. Now this is the first plural verb that we have in our story. We have a whole lot of verbs. Avram has done a whole lot of actions, some of which easily could have been made into plurals, but they were all said from Avraham's perspective. He did this, and he did this, and he took that, and he placed this on that one. He's doing everything. The first plural verb that we have in our story is right here, Vayelchu shnehem yachdav, and the two of them went together. This is no longer verse 3, Vayelech el hamakom, and he went to the place. He didn't go alone. Who did he go with? He went with Yitzchak, he went with two lads and the donkey, but he went. And now that the donkey's left behind, and he's taken all of his materials, it's Vayelchu. Now they are both going. Together they're traveling up to the place. So far so good?
Mm-hmm.
7. Vayomer Yitzchak el Avraham. And here we have the first speaking part of Yitzchak in our story. Yitzchak, the son, says to Avraham, Aviv, father, Vayomer Avi. I'm sorry, I misread that. Vayomer Yitzchak el Avraham Aviv. And Yitzchak said to Avraham, his father, Avi. He said, father. Vayomer Hineni Bini. And Avram responds, here I am, my son. Vayomer. And Yitzchak says, Hinei ha'esh v'ho'etzim. Here is the fire and the wood. Ve'ayei haseh le'olah. But where is the sheep for the sacrifice? Now, this verse is a powerful verse. Yitzchak says to Avram Aviv, to his father. Now, that's the narration of the Torah. And how does the Torah narrate the relationship between Yitzchak and Avram?
A loving relationship.
Right, to his father. The Torah could have easily told us, Vayomer Yitzchak el Avraham. I know who Yitzchak and Avraham is. I know who they are by this point. Torah says, again, this is a narration, and Yitzchak said to his father, Avraham, Vayomer, what does he say?
Father.
Avi, father. What is the one word that Avraham does not want to hear at this point? Right? This is it. Because he's calling him a lad, he's about to embark on a very difficult task. And Yitzchak says to him, father. Vayomer, and how does Avram respond? Hineni bini. Here I am, my son. Now, the Hineni we've seen before, where was the first Hineni?
God
calls out to Avram out of the blue. Normal day, Avram's sleeping, it's middle of the night. And Avram says, Hineni, I'm ready. Having no idea what's coming. Now he does. It's 3 days into the journey. And his son calls out to him and says, Tati, Abba, Daddy. And Avram responds, Hineni bini. Here I am, my son. Vayomer, and Yitzchak says, Hinei ha'esh v'ha'itzim. Like, I'm a little bit confused because we left everybody behind. You told them that we were going lehishtachaveh, to bow down. We're schlepping this wood. It's on my back. It's really heavy, Dad. Climbing up this mountain. I got this wood. You got this big knife. Hama'achel is the knife. You got the stuff needed for a fire. Sure looks like we're going to bring a sacrifice, Dad. Where's the seh? If you were afraid we weren't going to find a tree to chop down, aren't you afraid we're not going to find a lonely lamb at the top of the mountain just waiting to be sacrificed? Where's the seh? Aye, where is it? Vayomer Avraham, and Avraham says, Elokim yirelo haseh li'ola bini. God will seek out for himself the seh, the lamb, for the offering, my son. Vayelchu shnehem yachdav. And the two of them went together.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Why did Yitzchak assume that it was a lamb that?
Okay, good question. Let's go back. So, why did he specify an animal? It's a fine question. In other words, the question would have been fine if he would have said, "I see the wood, I see the knife, I see the fire. What are we bringing?" And he specifies a lamb. I don't know if that was a common standard or if there's something more significant there, but that's a fine point. That Yitzchak already has some specific type of animal in mind. That's a great point. I don't know the answer to that. We'll see if we can figure something out. So we'll conclude with this. This is Avram's response. So how does Avram respond to his child? Now, Avram knows a lot more than Yitzchak knows right now. Avram has been given the command to bring his son up as an offering. Yitzchak does not know that. But Yitzchak has become aware that something is going on over here. The two lads, donkey even left behind, they're schlepping up the wood, they got the knife, they got the fire. There's no Seth. There's no animal here. Where is it? And Avram's response is, Elokim, Yirelo Haseli Ola Bini. Very interesting response. God, Elokim, will Yirelo, will seek out for himself. Yira, which is the same language of to see or to appear. He will seek for himself the Seh, the offering, the lamb that he wants for an offering, my son. Now that my son is an interesting placed my son. Simplest meaning is simply he's saying, my dear son, God will seek out for him the lamb that he wants. The other reading simply is, God will seek out the lamb that he wants, my son. But we certainly have here, again, not in narration, this is now Avram speaking, after Yitzchak says to him, Avi, my father? And Avram responds, I am here, my son. And then he says again, my son here, God will seek out for himself the lamb that he desires for the offering, my son. And then the Torah concludes, Vayelchu Shnehem Yachdav. They continued walking together, the two of them. And where have we seen that phrase before? Right? Just two verses before, after they leave the donkey behind, the two of them. And that was the first time that we had the plural usage of a verb, that the two of them walked alone. Now, in between that walking alone and this walking alone, something significant is that when you have two phrases, they walked alone. Well, what's in between those two walking together? Not alone, they're walking together. They walk together. What's in between that?
Dialogue.
Very significant dialogue. The only dialogue that we're going to see between Avraham and Yitzchak in this entire story. This is it. Hey, Dad. Yes, my son? What's up with the lamb? God will show for himself the lamb. That's it. That little exchange, when we go back over this, is going to be the center of our story. This is a significant exchange. We have the two walkings on both sides of it, and this dialogue. So we will get back to that as we go through. Exactly what I expected, about 8 verses we got through this morning. We only have about 19 to do, so God willing, next week we'll finish up the story, and then we'll, in subsequent weeks, start breaking this down with Rashi, Ramban, and Rav Hirsch, and then we'll go, what I'd like to do really is take a look at Rabbi David Foreman has a series of lectures on this particular topic that I think we'll find phenomenal, and we're going to connect all three of these stories together, and we will we'll work it through as best we can. All right, have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.